this is really for people who see themselves as leaders, who want to make a big difference in the world. And I thought of you for many reasons. One is that you now are working solely with leaders and leadership. And then the other aspect of that is that I don't want this to be a traditional book on influence and leadership.
Yeah, got it.
Right? And so I'm looking for people like yourself who have a depth of understanding of what true influence is, as opposed to, you know, if you read this script, you know,
got it.
You're going to be influential, or, you know, some people think influence is manipulation and that kind of thing. So
yeah, it can be.
It can be, right?
There's forms of manipulating influence for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so for me, this is really about the deeper spiritual aspect of influence.
Yes.
So when I ask you, I'm just going to have three or four very basic questions, and then we'll kind of take it from
sure,
there.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. All right. So the first thing is, what is your definition of influence for yourself?
The way I see things, I see them coming in three stages of development. So influence, for me, is three stages, three levels of maturity, three degrees, for simplicity. It could be 20, it could be 50, but for simplicity, I'm saying three.
Okay.
So the first degree of influence is I'm influencing, I have some intention. The methods, the how, the ways are many. But the core intention is I want to have something for myself. I want to attain more clients. I want to have more success. I want to have more achievement. I want things to go my way. There's nothing wrong with that. It's influence for the sake of attaining a forwarding of one's own desires, one's own dreams, one's own intentions.
Yes.
That's the first stage.
Yeah.
Taking care of me. Influence for the sake of me, you, whoever, having some development.
Yes.
Some direction more towards what you want.
Yeah.
So you're influencing. That's first stage influence. Now, in the first stage of influence, we really do need to take care of ourselves. Right? So for example, if I want to grow my business and take care of my bills and my mortgage and et cetera, et cetera, there is a me factor in that. It's not just some altruistic, I'm there to serve the world.
Right.
There's I have to take care of meeting my needs and my wants. Make sure they're settled with. So I may influence and come from a place of influence and aim to influence others so that I can attain my goals. There's a light side to that, there's a natural side, and then there's, as we know, the worst forms of me influence are when it's manipulative, manipulation, twisting and distorting of truth, lying, using mental tactics to catch people off guard, state breaks, what they call in NLP, pattern interrupts, where someone's in a thought flow and you interrupt their pattern very strongly by your power of influence. And in that moment where you jolt them out of their reality that they're in, you insert your power of presence, your power of language, your power of authority. And in those moments, you attain something. That's a first stage moment. It has value and benefit, but also has a dark side and a shadow which comes back to you. That's what I've discovered for myself. So that's the first stage of influence, the fulfillment of one's desires. We can do that as we can do that in a way that's beneficial. We can do that in a way that's maybe not beneficial, but that does less harm. That's not problematic. We can also influence in a way that's problematic for ourselves and others. And worse, we can do it in a way that causes codependency or dependency or destruction. So that's the first stage. Why I'm sharing this is because we can actually grow in our personal awareness of our where we're coming from when we're in a state of lack. Usually is where we activate our first stage influence. When we're feeling less than, unloved, we're feeling lack in some way, emotional lack, financial lack, personal lack. And it's from there that sometimes our manipulations arise. If you do this, I'll do this. If you don't do this, I'm going to pull back my love this way. It's influence, but in a roundabout way. Passive aggressiveness is a type of first stage influence. Withdrawing of love and contact is a first stage manipulation. Even though you're not trying to do it, it's happening.
Yeah.
So we got to be aware of this.
Yes.
Now, let's just take a breath. So we all know I have those tendencies in myself. All of us.
Yes.
But if we want to ascend to the heights of profound leadership, the heights of the greatest impact that we can possibly make, we can't be grounded in first stage tactics, conscious and unconscious, as the core of our influential capacity. We have to go deeper than that. We've got to expand our heart wider than that. And that's the second stage of influence. So now we're influencing not for me, but we're aiming to influence through our talks, our lectures, our programs, our emails, our opening rates, and our titles, our headlines, our all the ways that we're trying to get people to listen and hear what we're having to say, right?
Yeah.
We do it because we've gone beyond me, and now it's a we mentality, which is a wider spectrum, a more exclusive, more balanced, more healthy approach to influence, right? So this is, there's great books and trainings and teachings and philosophies and all of that on how to have a win-win circumstance. Creating win-win is the ultimate of the second stage in influence. I'm doing this, yes, I will get greater business, yes, I will get more status and notoriety, and I'll get more word of mouth, and I'm going to build those structures in, but I'm also there to really serve you. I'm also there to have you win from this arrangement. And so the core, the intentionality, the source of it is in the altruistic notion of win-win. Win not just for me, not just for you, but all the parties involved. Let us all win together. And then your influence takes on, sometimes for some people, becomes more gentler. The vibration is more inclusive. The vibration is of me rather than me. That level of intentionality is where authenticity comes in. We influence through authenticity, bearing our truth, sharing about our wins and our losses, sharing where we've succeeded and where we have failed. So as to be transparent, and so that what we're sharing has the power of influence based on truth and our personal history, not made up or lied or exaggerated. Or deflated. I'm a nobody. That's still first stage. It's, I am me now. This is what I have attained. This is where I wish to attain. This is what I'm good at. This is what I'm great at. This is where I'm exceptional at. It's owning that. And it's also owning where you're not, where I'm not, and all that. So that's the second stage. And it's for the purpose of overall upliftment of whoever you're having an interaction with, whether it's your audience, whether it's your you as an individual, your family, your colleagues at work. So that's the third, that's the second stage of influence, of the source of it. I'll just take a breath with that. And then there's third stage influence. It's when there's enough of my needs are met, really. Enough of my wants are being achieved. Right? So I'm not starving. I'm not in some survival state. Just trying to focus on me, which is the default when you're in lack, you're in survival trigger. You're in making it trigger. Unfortunately, when you're in that form of influence, you get continuously, because the world reflects back as a mirror. You'll get people who don't like being influenced. You'll get people who are trying the same on you. The same bag you're trying, they're trying in a better way. And you end up in a universe of realities where it's the a universe of manipulations.
Yes.
And people around who are manipulating.
Yes.
And then you have to be defensive of their manipulation. Then you got to be smart enough and grow your consciousness enough so you don't get manipulated. Then you got to develop your boundaries and say, I won't let you manipulate me. Stop, halt. So that keeps going on. That never ends. The duality continues
mm-hmm.
when you're in that consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Got it.
So too, in the second stage, the duality of you, me, and the win-win gets perpetuated, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's more healthier. It's more life-affirming.
Mm-hmm.
It's more society-affirming when we have that. But for those who are grounded, they've cultivated enough of a win-win disposition, an influence not based on manipulation, but on truth-sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Truth, that's, in the second stage, the highest art form to cultivate, which is paradoxically not an art form at all,
mm-hmm.
is the bearing of real truth.
Mm-hmm.
This is what my needs are. This is what I would like to attain in this.
Mm-hmm.
This is my observation of this experience.
Yes.
This is how I feel about it. This is what I wish for us to attain in this agreement with us. So it's an inclusion and a feeling of that you are with me, I am with you, and I have requests that I want fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And I share them and I express them. This is very powerful. If you look at nonviolent communication, which is a whole, you know, very powerful philosophy, that's the pinnacle of that.
Yes, yeah.
Where it's the honoring of each individual as a conscious being
mm-hmm.
with choice.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you're not using influence to push each other or manipulate each other. The influence occurs because of your honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Your realness.
Yes. Yes.
That's the power of, you can see speakers, trainers,
mm-hmm.
coaches, helpers of other people who have gone from trying tactics to
yeah.
grow
yeah.
to transmitting the truth of who they are and their life lessons and the journey that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we should move towards if
mm-hmm.
we're not. And if we're already there, we need to get even stronger in the clarity of our truth sharing.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to give, what we want to receive.
Yes.
And then working it out with the other, knowing that they are equal. And if you know they're equal to you, you don't need to manipulate them. And in the second stage, you can also have the freedom to walk away knowing that if you wanted to have an outcome with the sale of a house,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to get more money and you're negotiating with the sellers, as an example,
mm-hmm.
the power in the second stage of influence is the willingness and the knowingness that you can walk away anytime.
Mm.
Freely.
Yes.
Without having that outcome be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
That the power is in not in the gaining or the not gaining of your desired outcome.
Yes.
But the power is that you can have it or not and be absolutely free. That's the ultimate
yes.
of second stage. And when you come to that place, there will be no need for manipulation.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense.
Because you're already free.
Yeah.
Manipulation is to get something that you don't have.
Yes.
And you feel you can't do it directly, so you find some subversive way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third stage is when you're grounded in healthy second stage dynamics of influence. You're authentic, you're real, you're truthful,
mm-hmm.
you're sharing what you're good at, what you're not, and you're cultivating an equitable arrangement of whatever. If you're in front of a group, you're on a teleseminar, you're on a webinar, the power of your authenticity is felt in the second stage, whereas when it's manipulated, it's also felt.
Mm.
People can't put a word on it, or they may not be able to hear it in their mind cognitively, but viscerally they'll feel it.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're grounded in that and you feel healthy in that, then the next level of cultivation, for me in this third stage, is you've gone from me to we, and now it's for the sake of all.
Mm. I like that, because when in my writing so far, I've been talking about me to we, but I love how you're saying the third stage is for the sake of all. I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
This is incredibly lofty. We mm-hmm. touch on it once in a while.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We touch on naturally coming there.
Yeah.
All the great wisdom keepers for years have saying that this is, if we come from there, that the cascade down into our everyday reality is far more healthy and beautiful and magical and magnificent and peaceful mm-hmm. and in equanimity than the second stage or the first.
Yeah.
Now, how do we enter that? How do we? What's the value of the third stage? Well, in the third stage, you're just open and you feel your interconnectivity and interconnectedness to all beings.
Mm-hmm.
All sentient life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not feeling it, you aim to feel it. I aim to feel now as I go on this talk, this lecture, this sales call, this sales meeting, whether it's an immediate thing, one-on-one, or in front of a group or stage,
mm-hmm.
you're going in beforehand and elevating and expanding. If you're in a first stage moment, you bumped your knee, you didn't eat, and you feel hungry, and you're like coming off an airplane, and you're running into a place, and you go, you know, you're grumpy, and you didn't get enough sleep, you're in a first stage moment.
Mm-hmm.
So before you go on, you take the 10, 15 minutes to source yourself. You get settled. Yeah, I'm in a me moment. That's fine. That's good. What do I need to take care of me? I need to have some water, I need to get some food, maybe some body work, I need to get some massage, maybe I need to breathe,
yeah.
maybe I need to process some of the charge I have in myself through various ways.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm coming to center. Okay, now, I'm here in my on this state, I'm going to speak in about half an hour in this line of speakers, and now I've got, what's my outcome? Well, I want to sell X amount of programs, and I want to make a big impact on these people this way. Okay, let me feel that. Okay, good. So you feel yourself entering that more expansive state of being. And now once you're there, you can say, now, what's even beyond that? How is my talk, this moment, this speech? If I'm in front of these people, they're the beginning of a wedge of 100 others.
Mm-hmm.
They're the front line of their family, their colleagues. That's what I look at when I step on
mm-hmm.
a stage, when I get on a call, whether it's an individual, whether it's in a webinar or a seminar. And I'm not only feeling them, I'm feeling their influence on the society that they're connected with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm speaking to them, speaking to their interconnectivity.
Uh-huh.
That's the third stage.
Yeah.
I'm seeing them more than just an individual. I'm seeing them as a person of influence.
Yes.
To the many, which
yes.
I'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never know how many people this person knows. I'll never know their interconnections. I may have some glimpses of it.
Mm-hmm.
They may, in the middle of the seminar, say, yeah, well, I'm a head of a company, or, hey, I've got two kids and a wife, and that may be the role of their leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're seeing people, when I'm seeing people in the third stage, I'm seeing them as the doorkeeper, as the gate holder,
mm-hmm.
as the sentinel of the temple of all the people that they are graciously serving, directly and indirectly. And so I open my heart, my consciousness, my intentionality to speak to them, knowing that they have to lead others through example and deed.
Mm-hmm.
What that does to the depth of my communication is miraculous.
Mm.
What it does to the depth of what's felt in the room, this person is holding beyond just us. It's intangible. They're feeling you. Your presence magnifies.
Right.
Your radiance magnifies.
Mm-hmm.
Your field of intentionality has gone from me to we, now expansive interdimensionally.
Yes, yes.
It happens.
Yeah.
By the simple willingness to go there. You don't even need to know a how.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to have the love to go there,
mm-hmm.
the love to go there,
mm-hmm.
the willingness to go beyond your personal needs, beyond the needs of you and the people that you have the pleasure and the honor to interact with. You're going to the meta purpose of why you and the individuals you're there with are here for,
mm-hmm.
and you're speaking to that, and that form of connection That form of intentionality and heart connection will draw upon the collective wisdom capacities. It'll allow you to pull out files in your subconscious mind even deeper and more rarefied. And it'll also draw upon you a type of pure influence which people will allow into their core. And that's the highest level of influence. Mm. The one that touches their core.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, Satchan, that... because I'm just thinking of examples of... You know, people never say to me, oh, I'll never forget how you taught me how to tell a good story. They don't remember that, but they'll always say, oh, you really saw me. You really understood who I was at my core. You know, and they feel seen and heard for the first time.
Yes.
Right? And is that sort of, like, in terms of purpose, I'm just wondering, is there a connection there? Like, are we influencing by really drawing out their purpose? Or what do
yes.
you think that is?
Yes. Yeah? For me, the purest, most powerful form of influence
yes.
is knowing and sourcing and assuming mm-hmm. that this person has a deep purpose in life.
Yes.
That they have something to contribute to the fabric of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking to the contribution that they have to the fabric of reality.
Mm. I love that. Love the way you said that.
I'm speaking to that in them.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking to the small personality,
yes.
although it includes it.
Right.
I'm not speaking to their sales goals for that week or
right.
that day.
Yeah.
But I include that.
Yes.
I know that by speaking to the core of their interconnectedness, their goal, their dharma, as we call it
yes.
in yoga,
yes.
their real reason, their ultimate multi-dimensional reason for being here, when I'm even attempting to go for that, the channel's open to speak to that.
Mm.
Intuitions arise in myself.
Yep.
Knowingnesses.
Yes.
My ability to contact and see, and them feeling, wow, this person sees me.
Mm-hmm.
They feel you.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, those are the most memorable exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the influence, that's the influence that happens when you're not trying to influence.
Yes. That was the first thing I wrote in my book. I said, if you're trying to influence, forget it, you won't.
Yes. Yeah. It's a paradox, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much. That makes sense. And I love the way you've organized that. It makes a lot of sense to me. How about you personally in terms of where your journey has taken you with influence? Have you so there's two parts. I want to ask you about people who've influenced you, and I also want you to speak to moments in time where you felt perhaps a breakthrough in how you influence people, or maybe it was a tragedy or something where you came to realize something.
Yes.
You know. So you can start with either one. It doesn't matter.
Wow. Well, first of all, what's coming up for me is a deep appreciation
mm-hmm.
and looking at the spectrum of influences I've had in my life.
Okay.
I've had profound mentors from my martial art teachers. Yes, they taught me kung fu and all. Looking back, whenever I look back, I can look at the tactical stuff and the techniques and all of that. But that's not where what my soul remembers. What my soul remembers was their love of me and the fact that they saw that I could go beyond what I saw in myself.
Mm.
They had more trust and faith in my potential than I had in myself.
Mm.
All my mentors. That's the sameness that no matter who they were, whether martial arts teachers, crazy wisdom teachers, enlightenment masters, you name it, each one of them felt and saw in me that I could go deeper, go sharper, be more refined, have more cultivation of something in me so that would be of greater value.
Mm.
to myself, family, and society. That seeing of me, if they saw it in me, it gave me the faith that I could see that in myself.
Yes, and did they do that through challenge? Did they challenge you?
Challenge and praise.
And praise.
Okay. Both.
Both. Okay.
Loving challenge.
Yeah.
Which is a form of influence.
Yes.
Especially to our masculine side. Our masculine side needs love, not brute challenge, like you idiot, you won't do
right.
this. That's brute. That's crushing challenge.
Yeah.
We can rise to it. But it doesn't feel good, and it's not lasting or maturing of our soul.
Yes.
But loving challenges, knowing that everyone, man or woman, child, adult, has a masculine side, which is the side of that goes and enjoys and is ever looking for deeper freedom in life.
Mm.
When we can lovingly challenge, hey, son, you know, you did really good with cleaning your room and excellent, but you know what? I'm going to challenge you to do, to wake up earlier, just a half an hour earlier, and read a little book. Read this. So that's a challenge.
Mm.
The feminine side within us grows through influence, through the acknowledgement of who and what we are and the praising of that. Mm. I love your beauty, daughter. I love your beauty, son. I love your beauty, my wife. I love the way you made that meal for me. It's the acknowledgement which acts as a deepening of influence because you're praising the innate quality of an individual and you're praising exact actions that they've done. And the feminine within us grows by loving praise and acknowledgement. And the masculine within us grows by loving challenge. So as leaders, if we can learn to cultivate our ability to lovingly challenge, so it's not crushing but uplifting, but also helping people get to their edge. Because a challenge without an edge is boring.
Right.
If we go beyond that edge, it's crushing. If we go less than the edge of our challenge, it's easy for them to do, so it doesn't seem like a challenge to them, so there's no real challenge. But if we know and intuit and start feeling into, okay, you did really well this week. Okay, do you think you did X amount in sales. Do you think you could attain, 20% more in the next month? Is that an edge for you? Yeah, it's difficult. Is it impossible? No, I don't feel it's impossible. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. But I could do 20%. Okay, there's your edge. Let's make a challenge. 20%. So that's the artistry of finding that edge.
Right.
And that's what elicits the evolutionary life force for the masculine side within us that seeks greater freedom. From the constraints of our previous limitation.
Nice.
The feminine grows through the love and the acknowledgement of what we have attained and just by being who we are without attaining anything. So that's I had this from all my teachers and mentors. Your other question was what again?
One of the questions related to what you're just talking about is a particular person. Do you remember them saying something or doing something that really took you aback and you just felt like you went in a different direction?
Oh, yeah. I can remember my Kung Fu masters like really challenging me. Like seriously. Even now, my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu mentor, every single class, I'm getting seriously challenged. But I'm also being held in praise. So, yeah, you're doing good here. This is good. Okay, this class is do it. An example is that sometimes I'm not feeling well or overwhelmed or exhausted before I even come to class.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like, oh, man, like 7 out of 10 times, I don't want to go to class, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's tough.
Yeah.
But it gets easier and easier because, it's interesting. One of my teachers... whenever I mention, oh yeah, it's a tough day, I'm exhausted, he says, don't worry, we're going to take it easier today. It's never the freaking case. It's freaking harder than I can ever imagine. Ever. Right? But his tone sounds as like it's going to be the easiest class in the world. But what he actually puts me through is just as freaking hard as anything else, if not harder. Always. So now I've realized, and I've come to the place where it's my choice that takes me to class And he's helped me ground in the choice that takes me to my class rather than my emotional state or my feeling of readiness or willingness. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do now with my choice of going to class and developing myself. It's simply my choice in itself to show frickin' up.
Yeah.
So that's what I've learned from my teacher Benito, my teacher Marcus. And they're low on the praise end because they're very masculine. Mm. So I have to find the praise in myself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The self-acknowledgement in myself. I don't look for it outside. Before I did, and that would make me feel yes or no. But my other teacher, Stuart Wilde, he said, you know what? You have to be free of the shackles of criticism and the shackles of praise.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not getting high and like elevated by applause and standing ovations and kudos and acknowledgments and endorsements, when you're just like, you receive it, you're happy about it, but it's like interesting evolutionary experience.
Mm-hmm.
To the same degree, you're critical of this, someone said something about your talk or your speech or your presentation and they were lacing into it or ridiculing it. Or when I'm free of both of those and I'm able to be in my own equilibrium, then my power of freedom is profound.
Mm.
That's a journey and there's no end to it. Mm-hmm. But it's a journey worth taking on where you're free of both those dualities.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that would lead to greater improvements for the person rather than saying, oh, I'm not interested in changing.
Exactly.
Right?
Then you, being who you are, when someone says, oh, I love you or I hate you, you're like, here's what I have to share next. Your power of influence is not pulled by their preferences or resistance to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to freely say and share regardless.
And you have obviously done a lot of work to get to where you are today in order to be that person. So for those people in my book who are reading, what would you say would be a starting point that people could move towards that equilibrium?
Okay. For me, it's the first step is the trust in what I have to share. The gifts I have to give is valid and worthwhile and deserving of me to share. That's the first step for me. My gifts, my thoughts, my feelings, my offerings are worthwhile, are worthy for others to receive. And getting grounded in that. And when you feel knocked off of that because something didn't go right, or you're feeling resistance along the way, it's to continue to bring yourself to that center, that equilibrium. Mm-hmm. I call it the warrior sage. For me, the warrior is impeccable actions.
Yes.
And the sage is impeccable love and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Sourced in that. So it's by walking that line, staying in that center. So that's the first step of influence. The next step is to truly feel into who you're serving, whether it's an individual or many. What's it like to live in their body?
Mm-hmm.
What's it like to live in their heart? What's it like to live in their soul? What's it like to live in their history? What's it like to live in your history? What's it like to live in with your hair? I'm a bald man, you have beautiful hair. What's it like to live in your body as a woman's body?
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to feel.
Yes.
I have to get out of my own self, soften the front surface of my body, and start intuiting what's it like to live inside of your beingness.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I feel that, the most powerful way to influence I found is to feel what moves them in their life.
Mm-hmm.
What are their goals, their desires, their yearnings?
Mm-hmm.
And conscript myself to be of service to that. Not what they say.
Yeah.
What you feel to be, what they really want in their life. Most people are using external influence, which is pushing, manipulating, wordsmithing, all these type of things. Mm-hmm. Yet if you really truly feel the soul of what their soul's deepest yearning is, and you find a way to up-level theirs find a way to speak so that your offering is serving their soul's calling, mm-hmm. then you're in the Tao of influence. Mm-hmm. Then they will do the things necessary without any pushing.
Yes.
That's the essence for me.
Yeah.
What's it like to live in this audience's history? To have all that they've had to come to this point? What are they really yearning for here? Really? May I open and soften myself. May I let go and relax and release my own agendas for the sacred time I have here. And may my soul agenda be the fulfillment of their soul agenda. Mm-hmm. That's third stage intention, pure intention. And from there, the language flows. Even if you go, even if you do everything horribly wrong is what speaking courses may tell you. Put your hands in your, take your hands out of your pockets, stand in a good posture, stand in a certain place, modulate your language with these paths. All of that, you can just say thank you, and you can bumble and stumble and and ah, and sound awkward all the way into creating the greatest shifts in people's lives mm-hmm. by simply feeling what their soul's calling is and being a devotee mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. in the time that you have interaction with them. Yes. Or engagement or agreement. And that to me is the freaking essence. Because from there, the subconscious, the superconscious mind gets activated. Intuitions arise. Right action happens. Balanced action. Just enough praise. Enough challenge. All the things that we're talking about. All the techniques and methods of increasing your influential capacity mm-hmm. come into the Tao. They come into mm-hmm. proper measure. Mm-hmm. They come into harmonious relationship. Now it doesn't become techniques or tactics anymore. It becomes the fulfillment of your dharma with them.
Beautiful. Thank you. And in terms of influence that you have offered to people throughout your many years, and your training and illumination intensive, I remember taking that a long time ago. Is there any moment or perhaps a few years where you felt, a shift in the way that you were influencing people?
Yeah, I think I've gone through this journey that I talked about. First stage me to we for the sake of all beings.
Oh.
It's my own personal journey.
Okay.
I'm at a place now where my wants and needs at a soul level, I know I can attain them.
Yeah.
Even if I'm old.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I've come to the place in my life where I feel, you know what, even if I'm 80 or 90, I think I could, from who I am, I could swing a deal or two and take care of the basic needs of life.
Yeah.
And not only my needs, but my wants. Mm-hmm. Because I've come to that place in myself through time and trust and proving it to myself, right? Mm-hmm. For me, it's like I'm now in the privilege of really, you know, my goal was I wanted to, years ago, how could I serve the world? Mm-hmm. And before I thought it was, you know, like it's a great idea, right? Sounds New Age hippie, how am I going to serve the world? And I found myself now where I'm in a position where I'm actually serving world leaders.
Mm.
Like truly.
Yeah.
And what world leaders have in business, in politics, in science, they all have within them some sense of failure that their goal cannot be fully attained in life. Some subconscious imprints, their own baggage of I could, you know, they have fail scenarios that go off in their consciousness. I could fail because of this. I could fail because of that. I could fail attaining my goals in this and this. my influence now, my humble influence, where I feel I'm in the pocket of where I'm meant to be right now, is helping those leaders remove and dissolve the obstacles that they feel of how they could possibly fail in making the biggest impact. So I'm serving my dharma by helping beings who are pulling a lot of strings. And so by serving them, I'm serving the world greater than me trying to pull those strings myself.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what I feel very honored, yet in the Tao with. So it doesn't feel like a big, doesn't feel like, oh, I need to celebrate this. It just feels like this is what I need to do now.
Mm.
And that to me is the essence of being in the Tao of influence, is I'm not exalted, nor am I self-depreciating. I'm just doing what needs to be done from the sum total of my capacities.
Mm-hmm.
Without extra fanfare, without jubilance,
yes,
without affirmation, just because. And and it's so freeing. What destiny holds next, I don't know. But I'm in my pocket and I'm very grateful for it. And I feel very resolute and relaxed in it as well.
And the last question I have for you is around community, because what you and Suzanne have created here, to me, is quite profound in terms of the movement towards celebrating community. And one thing that I noticed when I was in Italy during the Florence area, I was just, I don't know why, I missed it in school, but when I was in the area of all the museums and the David and all the amazing works of art that are there, what I noticed was that many of those people, probably at least 20 people, all were born in a certain period of time and all achieved such massive accomplishments.
Yes.
Right? And so then I got curious and I thought, well, what is it about that time period? What were they doing? What was the community like?
Mm.
Right? And so I discovered that there was a real community first of all, people that, like the artists themselves, that would gather and talk and listen and spend hours just talking about one piece of perfection of art, right? And then there would be the Medici family who embraced the artists and brought them to their home to live, and like it was a sense of family. And I think that family and sense of community is so lost. When people think of influence, the last thing they think of is this kind of true family community.
Yes.
And so I was curious on your perspective of all of this because of what you're doing here.
Well, because of my Indian heritage, my parents had always people at our house. They were always a community hub. I really grew up with the feeling of community inclusion.
Mm.
Always. I grew up, I was very blessed to have parents who, you know, if there's some Indian family coming from India that's settling into Canada first, their house, our place would be the landing portal where they would set themselves up, get themselves grounded for a month or two, find a job, and then go rent their own. So it was like come here, get settled, get yourself together, and go.
Yeah.
And so I was always around new people.
Yes. Yeah.
And they would always have been gatherings, food, and party. And I realized, for me, that there's a magic that happened in community that
yes.
can't be, you just can't have if you're with just one or two or a few people.
Right.
And that there was a magic, a profound magic that happened in community where there's no teaching, no training, no philosophy, just people sitting around in proximity with each other, breaking bread, telling jokes, grumbling, whatever they need to do with each other, that the proximity of beings just being with each other had its inherent profound magic.
Mm.
where nothing was happening. People are laughing, talking about movies, what they saw, what they... It didn't matter.
Yeah.
The content was secondary to the contact. Many times I thought, is it the content?
Yes.
And what I've realized that the content is all secondary, tertiary, maybe even more down the rung. What was more valuable as influence in the context of influence, in the context of community, was the quality of contact. The openness, the truth, the vulnerability, the joy, the exchange of being to being as we're doing right now.
Yes.
The quality of contact. So it didn't matter if we were talking about UFOs or talking about curry.
Yes. Yes.
Or talking about how to grow our businesses or talking about how to parent or talking about the best wines. The content was all secondary.
Yes.
And even the context was secondary. The magic was happening in the contact.
Yeah.
So as I grew through life and experience, I learned ways of creating artful ways of magnifying contact between individuals and community. And so all my structures, all my live events, all my social events, anything that we do personally or professionally in groups, always has the element of contact as the pinnacle. And, you know, there's methods such as the dyad methods that I use to create deeper contact.
Yeah.
There's sharings, communication parameters, communication suggestions.
Mm.
And all these things increase the quality and depth and beauty of contact. And I think that's where the biggest magic is.
Mm. Thank you.
Contact. That's what we're really thirsting for. That's why people go out to workshops, keep coming to workshops.
Mm.
It's not the content. Many people think, oh, wow, I got great content. They're buying the next program. It's the quality I realized over years. So, for example, I've been training my accelerated evolution, right, for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one of my team members do a personal interview with each one of them, what their benefits were, values, so that we can pull out for communication, right, for marketing. What did you get out of it and all that. And you know what? She says at the end of the day, she says, I interviewed your top master coaches, and there was about 15 of them, and they all love the methods, the techniques, the philosophies. They're like blown away by all of that. But the underlying thing is, oh God, when we get together, how freaking amazing it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The quality of individuals that we're humming with, what we talk about, what we share, it's unlike any other place.
Beautiful.
We actually get to open up to our core and share truths and not have them stomped on or be talked back to.
Mm-hmm.
They're just accepted and received.
Yes.
When I realized that the magic sauce that was, you know, hard to define from the outside but was made present to through these interviews was, wow, the quality of who we get. I love the interactions and who we are. And all the teachings, the content, the context is all secondary. I found out that many of them just want to be part of it because of that.
Yes.
And that's why religions perpetuate. That's why ideologies, which have seemingly wacko ideologies, you wonder, why would people stay in that ideology when it sounds wacky?
Yes.
It's because the quality of contact is greater than what they're getting in everyday life.
Wow.
So I aim to keep the quality of my contact high and replenished and vital and real without the overlay of ideology. Because when contact is created, that's a great manipulative way then to seep in your ideology.
Mm-hmm.
When everyone's open and deep and all interconnected. Now, let me tell you about how the rays of planet Zeton are influencing you in a bad way and what we need to do about it, or whatever, whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in that open context, then you can get people to fight a war.
Yeah.
Because the contact with each other, the loyalty, the camaraderie, makes people think about the context less.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're true leaders, we should be really conscientious to foster the truth of contact, the truth of individual freedom and love, and hold our own contexts and ideologies lightly,
mm-hmm.
so that truth can grow.
Now, there's one thing I'm wondering about, because I don't know which way I'm kind of, and it's probably good that I don't have a preference, but when you've heard, I'm sure, I think it's Tony Robbins, somebody, I think it was Tony Robbins, but I don't know if I don't think I agree with it, and it's you are the sum total of the five people you hang out with. But what I don't like about it is that people have very little sort of compassion and connection with anyone that's outside of their worldview or their,
yes,
you know, of what they're up to. So what I appreciate about you and Suzanne is there's all sorts of people that show up, right?
Yeah, everybody.
I mean, it's like everybody. It's like this huge, eclectic group. And so I appreciate that, because I think that's a mistake. I don't know. I think I know what he's trying to say, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, the intention of that is that if you're humming with high-vibe folks, that you'll high-vibe too.
Mm.
If you're humming with low-vibe folks, you'll hide with that. You'll start resonating with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you are around a bunch of people that don't believe that they can move beyond their limitations, then the gravity of that will pull you down.
Uh-huh.
And if you're around a people who have the ascension view that we can keep growing and move, so that's the essence of that philosophy. There's mm-hmm. truth in it, but I like everyone. I love the scoundrels. I love the crazy folks. Yeah. I love the ordinary folks.
Yes.
I love the people who just have a nice smile, and they're not really great speakers or orators, but they just look at you in a certain way and hug you. To me, that's just as valuable as the greatest orator. For me, the love and creating contact is not tactical.
Yes.
When we're trying to create contact and spaces for tactical outcomes, we degrade the depth of our wisdom.
Yes.
We come from a limitation. I think that's the bigger scene here.
Yes.
So just like the parables of Jesus hanging out with the low-trodden people, you look at the great masters, they don't just hang out with the high and lofty. They
yes.
hang out with everyone.
Right.
And so I saw this, and I read this, and I saw examples of this with my own mentors. I remember once my teacher, right, we're whipping around England, right,
mm-hmm.
in this minivan. And we're on this, like, crazy adventure, right? We're just whipping around. We're going through London, and we're whipping around. And he pulls over and opens the minivan. We're at this, like, dance club. And he says, "Hey, hoy." And this person comes over. And he goes, "Come on in. We've been waiting for you." And the guy comes in. And I'm thinking this is his friend. And then we stop at another place about half an hour. And, you know, we start chatting with this guy in the car and all that. And then about 5 minutes later, we stopped at another place. And he picked up another person. And we're chatting and all this. And then I'm going, "Yeah, so how long have you known, Stuart? I thought we were just coming to pick these guys up to continue our party." And then, "What are you talking about? Like, how long have you..." "No, no, we just met you now." I went, "What? It seems like you know him forever." He goes, "No, mate. You sound like you guys look like a fun group to be with, so we just hopped in the car." His inclusion energy,
yes.
that joyful, cut loose, crazy wisdom that he had, that was a demonstration of me, like, I can open the door and invite anyone in.
Mm, yeah.
It made a big impact to me.
Yeah.
And so I aim to have that, because, you know, it's incredible the no-names who've influenced me deeper than the big names.
Mm. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Influence is not by your status. Not in the third stage. Influence is by your openness to others' truths, others' spectrum of beauty, others' beauty. I saw with my mentor how he would love anyone equally. He may not like them, but he would love them equally. He could have in the room some, like multimillionaire, very influential in the world of business, next to some 19-year-old that had zero money, stuttered, was very insecure, but had this quirky way of seeing truth. And for him, that was worth so much. So I went, if he can see that in the quirkiest people, in the most seemingly like unreal, then I could find that too. So that's been my aim and my goal, and to widen my perception of everyone's beauty, you know. I think we all can do that, and there's no end to that.
Anything else you'd like to say to complete our...
The heart of influence is devotion to people's evolution.
I love that.
That's the source of it being the most purest and the most powerful.
Thank you so much, Satyam.
You're most welcome. Most welcome.